Blog Talk Radio.
Sarah figured out that by switching to Metro PCS, she gets two free smartphones.
Your barbecue ribs are the best.
Take the rest home with you, Sarah.
Just like she figured out that by visiting her in-laws, she doesn't have to cook for the rest of the week. You too figure it out. Get two free 4G LTE smartphones from top brands like Samsung and LG after instant rebate when you switch. Metro PCS. Wireless. Figure it out. Coverage not available in some areas. Sales tax not included. See store or metropcs.com for details and terms and conditions.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Unlimited Realities. I'm your host, Lisa Zimmer, and today we're going to have guest Jack Armstrong with Lessons from the Source, a wonderful book that's very inspirational, very moving and timely. And it comes in at a time where wherever you are in your spiritual path, whether you've been on your path for several decades or you're on your path in a few months, you have come to the right book. This is an inspirational book that's going to be a great addition to your books that you hold, like kind of like your Bible book, you know, like on your nightstand where you need some inspiration. It's a great, great go-to inspirational book. Jack, thank you so much for being with us on Unlimited Realities. Welcome.
Thanks very much. It's wonderful to be here.
Well, thank you. I loved your book, Lessons from the Source. It's a wonderfully inspirational book. And let's talk a little bit about your journey in being nudged in this book, because it in reading it, you tell a story on how this was an experience that you kind of like felt the nudge and you put the nudgings away for a while, and then it came into focus in creation for yourself. Is that right?
Yeah, well, it needs a little more context than that, perhaps. The nudgings to do this book, yeah, had gone on for a long time. But what's in the book is not a product of my own rational, conscious mind. For more than 30 years, I have been receiving and transcribing lessons, teachings, spiritual thoughts, whatever the terminology is, that somehow flow through me rather than coming from my own thought process. And I, for most of that 30-plus years, didn't really have a clue what was going on, and I didn't tell anybody about it. I thought part of my upbringing was you really have to impress people and have to make sure they think you're good and you can do a good job. And I didn't know what was going on, so I didn't tell anybody. But I'd look at this stuff, and I'd think, wow, this is really incredible, because it flows so fast. I just need to take my conscious mind and set it aside and get out of the way. And it's essentially taking dictation from thoughts. And
right.
I will not hear a voice, but the thought will be there. And I just start writing, and sometimes it goes so fast I can barely keep up with it. And when it's done, and I usually don't even remember what I'm writing, and when it's done, I look back at it, and it's I couldn't make this stuff up. It is eloquent and simple and clear, which most of my writing is not. But when I write for myself, I am an utter perfectionist and go over things time and time and time again to try to reach perfection. This stuff needs no editing. I mean, it comes through in the final form. And the most embarrassing part for me is not that I didn't let anybody know about it, even though I knew it was incredible. I ignored it. It's as people who have read the book will know, it's some extraordinary spiritual teachings in language that's easy to understand, and it was directed to me, you know, for the stuff I was dealing with, though it clearly affects most of us. But I would read it and I'd say, this is incredible. And I literally put it in my nightstand beside my bed and forgot about it. And much of this, you know, there's still stuff I haven't read for years. But the nudging that you talked about was also very real. And the material in the book was written over a three-month period at the end of 1995. And I was going through some hard stuff, and here came all these things. And it was the first time, the only time that I've ever written every day for an extended period of time, and it was the first time that the voice speaking through this stuff started referring to them as lessons. And I knew then, and as you said, the nudging has continued, that I was supposed to share this stuff with people. But, hey, there's no way I'm going to do that, because then people would find out that I'd been writing this stuff then, and I just resisted it all along. But I also knew that if I ever did create a book, which, of course, I never would do, the title would be Lessons from the Source. And I went through a sort of dark night of the soul experience some years ago, and I moved to a new city and spent a lot of time in solitude and working on my own spirituality and pulled this stuff out again. And it's been really helpful to me, but I finally got to a point where I just surrendered. And I said, okay, I'll do something. You let me know what it is and how to do it. And out of that came this incredible book.
That's wonderful. Now, would some people term this as a bit of a channeling in your writing, that you kind of stepped outside of yourself and allowed your higher self to kind of tap in and allow this writing process to begin?
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I mean, some people would term it that, and it has both positive and negative connotations with many people. So would you term it that, or would you term it more of, you know, spirit working through you, spirit speaking to you? Because it definitely does have a higher vibration in its flow and how it's delivered, because it really takes you to your heart. It really takes you to your truth in the most simplistic way. And I don't mean simplistic in a way of, you know, not deep, not soul searching. It's simplistic in a way of taking some really far out complex ideals and theories and really making it for the layperson a very simple approach to tapping into their soul and their essence. And I really loved that. I really loved that anyone could pick this up and really drop down and into their heart and their soul very easily.
Yeah, I think that's perhaps the most, I was going to say important, I don't know what the right word is, remarkable, I don't know, aspect of the book, is that it is so clear. I channeling is a word I avoided for a long time, and I honestly didn't know what was happening.
Okay.
My concept of channeling had always been sort of trance speaking, and I had seen people, you know, before be channeling was the word used then, some other being through their own voice. And I just assumed that was what channeling was, and I didn't know what was going on with me. And actually, after I had decided to do the book, and it was in progress, a friend referred me to a book called With the Tongues of Men and Angels, A Study of Channeling. And this is a scholarly study that was done in the 80s where this individual looked at all forms of what he considered to be channeling, starting with a Ouija board and working its way up. And I was reading this, and lo and behold, came upon his definition of one of the forms of what he called channeling, which was inner dictation. And it almost took my breath away because it defined exactly what
right.
I had been experiencing for all these years. And I thought, wow, you know, this is, I'm not crazy. And he said,
right.
you know, other people have been experiencing this for centuries. And he cited a number of examples, one of which was A Course in Miracles. And I went on to the Course in Miracles website and found an audio recording of Helen Schuckman, who is the person who received and wrote down that material. And she's describing in this recording what the process was like. And it was, I could use the same words. You know, it was exactly the same thing. And I thought, wow. I don't know why me, but it clearly was, and I think she didn't know why her either, but it clearly was exactly the same phenomenon. So I'm now more comfortable with saying channeling and realizing that, you know, for a lot of folks that still has sort of an odd connotation, and it did for me
sure.
too. But
right.
But there's no other real word for it.
Right. Right. There's really not.
Spiritual.
And that's why, you know, I was struggling with channeling because I'm the same way with the word psychic. So I understand what you're saying. You know, it definitely does. I mean, it reads that way. It reads like it's from such a higher realm of consciousness, a higher realm of knowing. And it really settled me in reading it. It really was like kind of a soothing, you know, like a calm. And let's just jump right in here because every chapter that you have, we could talk about forever because you've got them really organized in such a way that explains itself but also leaves you open to explore your own spirituality. And you start off with talking about the unity of God in all of creation and also including energy into that topic. And oftentimes, you know, if there hasn't been a lot of soul discovery on the essence of God in your life on a day-to-day level, in every experience, in every emotion, the understanding is a little bit primitive. So, like, can we talk a little bit, or can you explain to the audience in regard to what unity with God and all of creation really feels like, and what that energy really starts to stir up, or what it can actually come and present itself in a feeling level to the individual?
I'll be glad to take a shot at that, but I want to make one thing clear, at least from my perspective, Lisa. I'm a person who is still learning this stuff, and
okay.
and I work with it myself, and I don't claim to have mastered any of this. It's been really helpful to me, but I don't want your listeners to think, wow, here's a guy who's a real modern day guru or spiritual teacher. I'm somebody who has, for whatever reason, been given this material and has felt compelled to share it.
That's a wonderfully humble soul and spirit there, Jack. But you do have some incredible wisdom here that people are definitely, you know, benefiting from. So we'll just go with your flow here on that.
Okay. The first little segment, and somebody referred to this book as being bite-sized chunks of spirituality, and they're broken up. The segments that are in here were received at various times over that 3-month period, and my challenge was organizing them in a way that made sense and pulling out little segments. But the first one that I put in the book says, "This is your true and natural purpose and function in the physical world: to remember and relearn your unity with me, and then to express that unity through your own joy, peace, love, and goodness. It is simple and natural and direct." And what the book teaches, and it and that I think the basic themes go a little bit beyond this section, but what this is saying is source, God, the universe, whatever term you want to use, and there's no right or wrong term there, created everything, and including us, and including trees and birds and, you know, stones, whatever, but that the essence of source is present in everything. So if it's present in everything, including us, then we are at one with everything. I'm just opening the book here and reading these things. There's another little sentence that says, my energy, my reality, my being is present everywhere in the universe. It is in everything you can see and in everything you cannot see. It is in every cell of your body, in the air you breathe, in the thoughts of your mind. This is a big concept, yet it also is of the utmost simplicity. Once you can get beyond the barrier of using the physical world and its, quote, natural phenomena, unquote, as your frame of reference, the concept of omnipresence will become something that you'll be able to accept as part of your reality, even if you can't understand it on an intellectual level. And that's one of the continuing, I don't know if I want to say themes or not, but over and over again in the book, it says, you know, your conscious mind may never be able to understand this stuff.
Right.
But your challenge is to accept it as if it were true and live your life based on that acceptance, even though, you know, your conscious mind might fight it.
Right. And also in, you know, as you're moving through with seeing the divinity of God in your acts and your actions and all living things and your thoughts and how you're recreating your life or creating your life in your day-to-day choices, you also have it flows because you flow from seeing God in everything to really looking at the essence of God as everything is all good and everything is in divine order. And so, you know, it's easier for people to go there and accept that when things are flowing in a really harmonious way. However, you know, divine order can also wear a mask and show itself in a way that isn't always pleasant. And yet it still is a divine order, a lesson, a challenge or an obstacle to get through, but there's a gift in that seed. And I really loved how you explained how the divine order of things really manifests in our lives, and you know, you put this in a way that it is the operating principle of the universe, but it also makes everything, when you are entrusting that divine order of how things are manifesting, when you entrust in that, you see how things are moving more efficiently and effectively. Do you have some examples in when you created this book for all of us, your divine order of things and how things were showing up for you, validating that indeed this is the time to get this out or indeed this is something that you need to have? Because I believe in our personal lives, when we can apply it on a day in, day out level, it becomes such a teaching not only for us but for others.
There's one example that I think of a lot. I just want to step back a minute and offer a little more context to the whole divine order thing, because it's really important and it's a foundation, I think, for accepting all the other teachings in the book. The three basic concepts as I see them in the book are what you just talked about, the unity of all creation. Then that we are eternal spiritual beings having a temporary and yet simultaneous experience in the physical world, and that our good is always there, and it's always accessible to us, and there's goodness and blessing in every situation. And again, part of the teaching is that we maintain, we almost all of us, I think, while we're on this physical journey, sort of lose contact with our spiritual reality, which is our real reality and which is eternal, and we focus exclusively on the physical world. And the concept of divine order, as it's presented in here, says it goes back to the your good's always here, and it looks at the aspects of divine order that we always accept unconditionally, you know, that the solar system is perfectly organized, and that the earth revolves around the sun, and that the seasons happen one after the other, and that an apple tree produces apples instead of oranges, and that all living things come from seeming nowhere and then die or end their living condition in the physical world. And it says, you know, you already accept that. So if you can accept that all things are working together for good, then since you're one with everything else, why should it be any different in your life? And right. And if you can just allow that and trust that, that's the key. The example I was referring to was with regard to doing the book. I had said, okay, I'm willing to try something, and I knew that it was the stuff that had been written during that three-month period. I reread it, and I started pulling out themes and topics and so on that seemed like they ought to belong. And again, they were from all different days during that period. And I'm created a Word document for each of them, and I must have had 40-some. And then I just hit a wall. And I said, okay, so how in the world is this supposed to be organized? And I just couldn't figure it out. And I took, a month or two later, I took a week away in a remote location, and I took my computer, and by the end of the first day, I knew exactly how it was supposed to be organized. And the whole outline was there, and it was clear. And by the end of the first week, I had a first draft. And that came after not really having a clue what to do with this stuff. And I let go of my frustration and said, okay, show me what to do. And there it was. And again, it was for me, letting go of my own frustration, my resistance, which had to do with what can I accomplish and how can I organize this stuff I've been given, and saying, okay, show me how. And there it was.
Oh, that's wonderful. And that's very inspiring for me personally, because I'm at that little spot there with writing, so maybe I need to go take off for a week somewhere with my computer and leave the kids home. That's a great idea right now, Jack. Thanks for that one.
I'm pleased to be of service to you.
Yes, I appreciate that. Great timing. I'm going to move on into a really, for me, it was one of the best chapters of your book, and it was the one regarding the living in both the spiritual and the physical planes. And the reason that this resonated so much with me was because the first time I experienced this feeling of living in kind of two dimensions, I was 7 years old, and I really felt like I was not here. And I knew everything that was going on a physical plane, but I also was extremely tapped into someplace else. And the only thing I knew was that I was in contact with spirit at that time, and I would have these conversations in my heart and my thoughts and my mind with God all the time. And I felt very comfortable in that dimension. And then I had to, you know, go to school and be a kid. And I did that very well, too. But I really was aware of the other dimension. And I love this one line, I think, sums it up beautifully. And you have, the separation of the physical and the spiritual worlds seem to you to be complete, yet these worlds are separated only by a wisp of smoke in your consciousness. So let's talk about this a little bit, Jack, because I really love this part.
I think that's one of the key premises that it's really hard for most people to comprehend, because we see our whole reality as what's going on in the world around us. And I just opened the book to that same place, and this sort of summarizes it pretty clearly too. It says the physical and the spiritual are one. They are not distinct entities, even though at times the physical aspect of your reality seems to be the entire reality. This is the challenge of this adventure. You must exist on the physical level until your time is up, yet living exclusively on the physical level misses the point. You are a spiritual being. You must remember and realize and accept that this is true, and then enjoy your adventure on the physical plane from the perspective of the spiritual, which is the true source of all your good. Do not allow yourself to be deceived by the illusions. And then, as you know, the book goes in at some length about the illusions that we create for ourselves while we're in the world.
And that is, you know, that does sum it up, but it is very difficult on a conceptual aspect. It's very difficult to receive what that feels like if you aren't recognizing when you're in that moment to begin with. So
right.
it is something that, you know, if we can become more, I really believe it comes from your compassionate heart to be able to go into that realm of spirit. However, we are physical beings, and we're not supposed to be hanging out in spirit, you know, 24/7, because therefore we'd end up, you know, walking in front of a car, or, you know, falling
right.
in a hole, or, you know, we have to maintain the balance of both the physical and the spiritual.
Exactly.
And there's a lot of emphasis I find right now that, you know, kind of encourages people to detach from the physical, whether it is, you know, too much emphasis put upon, you know, the dynamics of what we go through on in our ego and our discernment and our rational thinking and our analytical mode and all of that. So it's almost as if we need to like accept or show people that this is an acceptable piece of the puzzle, that we definitely do have, you know, these moments in living on the earth that we have to make these decisions in addition to being connected to spirit. And we can do it simultaneously. It can be an energy and an essence that's within us in our day-to-day practice in our lives. And I really love the part where you have that there's not this part of us having to be one or the other, that it's an entwinement of who we are.
Exactly. And yet, that, as it said, that's the challenge of this adventure. You know, you have to acknowledge and accept your spiritual identity, which is your real eternal identity, and yet function in the physical world. And yet it says, you know, view the physical from the perspective of the spiritual.
That was great.
There's one of my, are you okay with me reading?
Oh, yeah,
from
please.
This?
Of course, this is great.
There's a, one of my very favorite parts in the book is in the section about illusions. And basically, it says that illusions are, we focus so entirely on the physical world that we see this stuff going on around us, and we give away some of our power to it, and consequently we get caught up in it, and all the negative emotions arise from that, when that person or that situation has no power over you in and of itself. It's the power that you give to it by thinking that it's that's really important. This little segment sort of offers, there are a lot of analogies in the book, and mm-hmm. and they've been really helpful to me. This says, enjoy this adventure in the physical world. It is a gift to enjoy, not a struggle to endure. If you can center your consciousness in the truth of your being, in your true reality, your identity, which is that spiritual identity, you can then see your earth life for what it is. It is an enjoyable diversion, a lesson in truth, a challenge for future growth. See it as such in the context of your true identity, and it will be much easier for you to reject the temptation to latch onto the illusions of the world and give them power over you. Your view of a magician's tricks is an appropriate analogy. If you compare your existence in the physical world and your understanding of it in your conscious mind to your true identity in the universe and your new acceptance and understanding of it, then think of a magician's stage performance as your earth life as seen from your elevated consciousness. Persons who are grounded only in human consciousness see a magician perform and are very impressed by what seems to be the astonishing reality of what he is doing. Yet they know and understand all during the performance that they are witnessing illusions. That even though what they are seeing seems absolutely real, they're close to allowing the magician to convince them that his illusions are reality. Yet through it all, there's an overriding understanding that these are simply illusions, and the audience has fun enjoying them. Being there and experiencing them is a diversion. They laugh and applaud and shake their heads in wonder and gladly pay money to enjoy the spectacle. This is an appropriate way to view your time on Earth. You are attending a fantastic magic show, a demonstration of illusions that seem so real you can't explain them, yet you know and understand and fully accept that they are illusions, and you enjoy them and then return to your true reality. I hope this will be a helpful perspective. As you shake off the illusions of the world, smile to yourself that they have seemed so real that you've allowed yourself almost to believe them, and then return comfortably to your true identity as a child of God.
And with the illusions, and that's a beautiful analogy, and also just some real basic truth to really define your illusions. And sometimes it's difficult for people when they are, you know, kind of meandering between both an illusion and as well as a truth. What is truth and what is illusion? And mm-hmm. you move on in your book, and you talk about, you know, not giving your power away to the illusions within yourself or the illusions that you're creating. And a lot of times, you know, sometimes we go through decades before we realize we've been living an illusion, or we've been trying to make something work that just we need to surrender to.
Yeah.
One of those things is like a deception, whether it's a deception from another, in a trust or in a loyalty, or it's self-deception. And oftentimes, you know, that can be confusing to someone who's new on the path in spirituality, because immediately the more common approach would be to chastise oneself or to condemn or to go into shame or blame. And in reality, it's just really coming to the surface to be healed and tweaked and moved through. So what would you say are some common deceptions or illusions that many people walk around with as they're starting to uncover themselves and uncover their own spiritual heart? Have you found like a common theme or common deceptions, such as, you know, a feeling of you know, priorities or values or morals or, you know, things change as we evolve. And oftentimes we have to let go of things. Like oftentimes we'll stay in a relationship longer than we need to, or we won't make a change in ourselves because it's safe where it is.
Yeah, I honestly haven't given thought to common deceptions and self-deceptions, because it seems to me that almost anything that we allow to have a negative influence to us, when we give away our power, we're deceiving ourselves. And again, this is really hard stuff. I mean,
right.
It's very profound information, and it's presented so, you know, in such easy to understand language that it helps get you started. But anything that we are afraid of, or worry about, or have doubts about, and consequently fret over, because we believe that situation or that person or whatever can really affect us, which, if we're operating totally, you know, in the physical realm, that seems absolutely real. But that's
right.
That's the deception. That's the illusion. You know, the magician is creating deceptions.
Right.
And yet, we know that he is. And yet, wow, they really
see
him.
I
wonder how he did that. Yeah. but I think that, you know, fear to me is our worst enemy. And one of the incredible blessings for me late in my life, and I'm no spring chicken anymore, but since I, you know, began focusing on this stuff again, is I pretty much have let go of fear. Nothing.
Oh, how wonderful.
I'm not, and I spent my life worrying about things and stressing over things, and I don't anymore. You know, I feel like I live, a peaceful existence. And again, that's not putting me on some elevated platform here. It's just I'm finally beginning to get it after a lifetime of, you know, of stress and worry
right.
and fear and blah blah blah, and it isn't there anymore.
That's a big one. That's a big one. And let's talk a little bit about rejecting the negativity and releasing the negativity as well in that frame of thought, because in addition to the worry, you know, those negs sure hang on a while.
That's
a good way
we
can release those.
I'm sorry, what?
Okay, that's good. That's good. So we allow them to. Where can we go in releasing them? How do we tap into that trust and that faith and allow that surrender to happen to where we are removing or moving through or addressing and, you know, neutralizing the negs?
One of the neat things about this book is that it gives some specific techniques for that.
Right.
But it seems to me the key is, you know, once you can accept all these basic truths that we've been talking about,
mm-hmm.
and sort of live acknowledging though all that stuff, even though our mind can't comprehend it, then recognize. The key is recognizing when we are creating negativity by giving power to situations.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this isn't easy, folks. But if you can, I mean, your body tells you if you're reacting negatively to something. And I've gotten to a point where most of the time, when that happens, I'll say, "Oh, look what I'm doing," and then it's about saying, "Okay, well, that doesn't have any power. Let it go." And like I said, there's several different techniques that the book offers, but the bottom line of it is recognize when it's happening, acknowledge it, and then let it go. Don't give it power.
And also, when you have those negative thoughts or those negative feelings that seem to pop up, and oftentimes we'll think we've moved through one part of our stuff, and we haven't. It'll pop up in a different form, in a different face, in a different mask. And so it's calling upon us to, again, address that part of ourselves, which brings me into the next part of entitlement. Because if we can't feel a sense of our sacredness, our wholeness, our entitlement within, it's not going to be as easy to excavate through the negs. It's going to be more challenging and more difficult. We're going to take things more personally. We're not going to see the whole picture and the divinity working in our lives. So let's talk a little bit about entitlement, because that's a big one. That's been a big one in my life. It's been very easy for me to give, very difficult for me to receive. And so the entitlement piece is still a very important piece that, you know, there's when you're walking on that spiritual path, there's this kind of this unspoken thought that, you know, it's humble to be a giver and not a receiver, or it's a humbling, you know, spiritual sense of self not to feel entitled, because then your ego will kick in. So let's talk a little bit about our spiritual entitlement, that, you know, we are of divinity and we are entitled to all the good the universe has to offer, and that we aren't limited. We're only limited by our thoughts and our beliefs within ourselves.
Yeah, that you've pretty much said it. You know, if we can, again, I'm making it sound so easy, but it's not. But if we can get to a point where we can accept internally that we really are this spiritual being, and we're kind of having an interesting adventure while we're temporarily in this phase, and that we're one with the source of all good, and consequently we would then be one with the good. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to read another segment from this, because I think the book, these teachings say it much more effectively than I can. But it says, you are entitled to all the good that the universe has to offer. If you can accept this entitlement, you will never need to struggle or plead or supplicate. It is yours. You are entitled to it. Period. End of discussion. How would a wealthy, all-powerful ruler act if he needed something? He would issue the order, stake his claim, and command that his good be there for him. You are the wealthy and all-powerful heir of my kingdom. All that I have is yours, and all that I can do, you can do also. Accept that and move on with the fulfillment of your dreams and your highest desires. And again, it's all based on that concept of unity,
right,
with everything, right, and with the source of the good and with the good itself. And I can speak only for myself, but my human mind will never be able to really comprehend that. You know, the whole thing of divine order as it's presented in the book, it to me kind of seems to be presented as evidence for us to think about. But the challenge is accepting that and living from the assumption that it is true, even though we can't really understand it.
And wouldn't that move us into, with our entitlement, with our inherent, because we are spiritual human souls here on earth, we have, all of us, an entitlement in God's great glory. Now, in knowing that on an analytical level, or at least receiving that on an analytical level, it can also be very challenging or difficult to receive it on a feeling, emotional, right brain intuitive level where, you know, to allow that flow to come through and also to really trust that guidance that comes in, which, you know, for me, a lot of guidance comes in on my intuitive level. And as I trust, it does on most people. But many haven't, you know, really accepted that they have that accessible to them at all times. So you have a really, you know, a great little flowing piece here in your chapter on flow, where, you know, this is a real challenge, I think, for most people, is, you know, we're raised to really fight, struggle, you know, work hard, go towards the goal, try. And when we surrender and we release, there's that flow, there's that essence. That's when we start to see the puzzle pieces falling into place, the divine order taking over and all of that. And you have in here the struggle is to work too hard at what should come naturally and let it flow, whatever the situation or whatever the need. So in trusting that flow and in trusting divine guidance that would come in with that flow, do you see that as an intuitive connection? Do you see that as a link with spirit that really triggers your intuition? Would you say that?
I don't know if contemplating the concept of flow necessarily triggers it, but intuitive is the best word, I think, available to us in English about how this stuff comes. And I've come to really, again, this is in recent years, I ask for and receive, but allow that guidance. And it's, you know, it's not dissimilar. This material that somehow I've been receiving and writing down is a form of guidance. It's that it's a knowingness, and it's hearing, not hearing, but there's, I think, my general guidance, and I assume everybody's, most people's, it comes in the form of sort of intuitive thoughts. And the struggle for me always was, you'd hear you'd get this one concept that basically was for your highest good, but your conscious mind would say, "Come on, that's not right," and reject it. I sometimes, when I'm doing this writing, if I allow my conscious mind to get in the way, it'll stop it. On my website, there's a place where you can sign up and get a free ebook where I took some of the many other writings that have been done over the years that aren't in the book and put them out there. There's one of those starts off, let me see if I can put my hands on that. I can't find it. But
go ahead.
No, the first line basically was, "Today we'll talk about cooking." And I thought, get out of here, you know. There was another one time that said peanut butter, you know. But I had to let go of that resistance. And this whole thing came through that's in the ebook that compares cooking to our own creativity and how we use it and how we share it and what we do with it. But if I had allowed that initial thought, "Come on, cooking, what?" to prevail, that never would have come through. And it's and I now, you know, I take it to a point of, you know, which street should I take to get someplace? And it's just sort of
right.
A knowingness. It's not saying you will turn right on the next block. It's just kind of a knowingness. Oh yeah, that's the way I should do that. Or even, you know, picking out fruit at the grocery store. Well, this one seems good. And who knows? You know, who knows
And I love that. I love that you've brought food into the discussion here, because I have said my whole life that, you know, you can tell the person the person's personality or their level of excitement by how they cook. Because if there's no spice, they're usually a little bit of a vanilla type of person. And if there's a lot of spice, there's a lot of spice. And I really use that metaphor quite a lot. In fact, my sons are now cooking, and they've got a lot of spice. So I really like that. I believe that what you have within you, it comes out on whatever creative realm it is, whether it's music, whether it's cooking, whether it's writing, it comes out. And let's go into the aspect of, okay, so we're co-creating this universe, we're flowing in divine order, we're trusting spirit speaking to us, we're following its guidance. Now, say we've got an issue, we've got a block, we've got a stumbling point. Do you feel like, in your opinion, do you feel that sometimes people remain stuck because it's their choice, whether it's a conscious awareness or an unconscious awareness, that somehow there's a comfort level in staying stuck on a situation or a decision?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. That, and I don't know if I can find it or not, but there's someplace in here that says, you know, it's much easier to accept the negative situation because it doesn't require any real effort on our part than it is to focus on our good and shift our perception and ask for and accept the good. And it really does take, you know, the kind of preparation and understanding that we've been talking about, but then always being vigilant and saying, no, that negative situation can't affect me. But it is, it's our choice always, in every moment.
Right.
Are we going to go with what is, because that's what is, and shoot, there's not much I can do about it, and it sure is tough, and I'm not having fun with it, but there's nothing I can do, so I'll fight it, you know, I'll resist it, I'll whatever. But that's easier for our conscious minds to do than saying, oh no, you know, that can't affect me.
Right. Or I have no control over that. Or
exactly.
I have, you know, that's something that's happening outside of me. It's not happening within me. I have no control. So it's again that giving that power away to the illusion. Now, when we talk about our faith and our beliefs and our trusts and our hopes, which is getting towards the middle or the end of the book, you talk a lot about what true beliefs are versus what professed beliefs are. Can you expound upon this for us a little bit?
Yeah, and I don't talk about it, but I share with people what was given to me. Yeah, that's that's a rather lengthy part in the book compared to most of the other stuff, but it says that true beliefs are based on this kind of understanding that we're talking about now, and they're the things that can never be questioned, and that's where the divine order concept comes into play. There are things in our lives that we'll never question. There, and that's a true belief. But then professed beliefs, as it's explained in here, are things that we've sort of come to a conclusion on ourselves, or somebody else has convinced us that it's true. And really, most of that, I think, is our, the focus here at least, is our spiritual beliefs, our perception of our true identity. And what this particular section is saying is, most of your beliefs about, and I'm not saying you to the collective audience there, but saying it to me, about spirituality are so professed. And for years, I mean, I've been on a spiritual path for a long time, and I, you know, read a lot of books and so on, and I could understand all this intellectually, and I could explain it to others, but when it came down to it, I still caved into the fear and the doubt and the worry. And what it's talking about is taking those professed beliefs, which we believe but can always be called into question in some way, and being able to shift them to true beliefs, where we'll never question them. We just accept that's truth for me. And again, I think that's one of the great challenges of for all of us on the spiritual path is taking this stuff that we really believe and can accept, but living it and taking it from professed to true.
Right, right. And with that, we have about 5 minutes left, and I want to get into the energy aspects of shifting ourselves into more of a divine flow. And that would include both the magnetizing of ourselves that you include in the book, as well as the light and the enthusiasm that you include. Can we talk a little bit about how, because it's one thing to you know, see it and visualize it and feel it and bring it in, but there's also a real need to co-create and act upon what we're divinely guided with. We can't just sit back and fold our arms and say, well, you know, hey, God's bringing it to me. We have to be a co-creative aspect in that process. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I really loved the part of magnetizing because, you know, when you're in the flow and you're bringing spirit in, there is an energy that you feel, and it's an energy that you feel from within, and it comes out, and people around you will feel it. Can we talk a little bit about what that is, that magnetism, that enthusiasm, that joy?
It seems to me that when we are expressing our true essence, and this is stuff that's been coming to me recently, you know, mm-hmm. is about living our true essence and expressing our true essence, which to me is the essence of God, which to me means joy and peace and love. And if we accept that as our essence, because we're one with the source that is that same essence, if we live that, we put that out into the world, we are then somehow connecting with that same essence in other people and in other things, and that makes us much more open to allowing those other things to come into our lives. And you know, it talks about enthusiasm too. And think about that. You know, when you feel enthusiastic, or you even encounter somebody, you're in touch with somebody else who's really enthusiastic and really excited and really happy. That, you know, that rubs off on you.
And that's again my conscious mind.
And we all have it, but most of us, many of us, suppress it, you know,
right.
because we're so concerned about all this stuff that's going on in my life. You wouldn't believe all the troubles I have, and it's real hard to be joyous or at peace when you're feeling that way. But when
yeah.
you can let go of the power you've been, you know, to pull back the power that you've been giving to that stuff and just say, okay, my true being is a joyous being, you know. I'm peaceful
yes.
and I'm loving. And that's true for everybody. And somehow I think when we are living that essence, we connect with others, and that somehow that there's a magnetic quality to
definitely.
That.
Definitely. It really is. There is a magnetism there that is felt within as well as without. And I want to make sure I get this on because we've got about a minute left. Listeners, please tap into Jack Armstrong through his website at lessonsfromthesource.com, where he does have an e-book download of other insights and inspirations. And Jack, tell us a little bit before we have about a minute left, and I didn't want to cut you off, but I didn't want the whole show to cut you off either. So in this next 40 seconds that we have, would you like to share anything with our audience overall for them to reach you or get in touch with you?
You can always reach me through the contact us part on the website. There are a lot of excerpts on the website and information about my experience. And you can buy autographed copies of the book on there. But there's also going to be an audiobook very soon, which a lot of people have been asking for, and I'm really excited about that. And there's a pre-sale discount going on now where you can get 25% off, and it'll be on a 4-CD set or a downloadable MP3, and I'm really excited about that. But there's...